Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 15, 2021. A senior Catholic bishop is calling on the various leaders that signed a revitalized peace agreement to do something about its implementation.
I think people are frustrated because of the implementation period has expired, but there should be some other possibilities to renew the implementation period.
And South Sudanese say democracy is the only hope for their country.
I think if we want to move a country forward, there must be recognition that the contribution of every citizen matters, regardless of whether that person has competed with you or has voted you or not voted.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Catholic bishops of South Sudan who have been meeting in Juba this week released a statement Wednesday calling on the Transitional Government of National Unity to implement the 2018 peace agreement. The Archbishop of the Juba Archdiocese, His Grace Stephen Amiu Martin, says the slow pace of the implementation of the peace agreement is not a good sign. Amiu says it is time South Sudanese leaders get serious and save lives by putting an end to the suffering of the people.
There is no any other way apart from this peace. Even though it has not been implemented, we say, yes, we have to implement this peace. That is the only possibility for us to survive as a nation. If we descend again to war, I think that will be a terrible alternative where we will no more exist as a nation. I think people are frustrated because of the implementation period has expired, but there should be some other possibilities to remove the implementation period.
You started by speaking to me about a leadership problem in South Sudan. What is the problem?
People in South Sudan for all these years since independence have not experienced any servant leadership. We have only those who are bosses, who are ready to command people, but to serve other people is a big problem in this country. So that's why we say the style of our leadership in our country should be that of really a servant leader, the one who serves.
And talking about leaders, President Salva Kiir is your parishioner. What advice do you have for him and his leadership style?
I think since my installation as the Archbishop of Juba, I've gone several times to President Salva Kiir in an effort to make him understand what we as Catholic would like him as a leader to do, as to propose as a servant leader. And I know it is not easy in our country today to be a servant leader, because a servant leader may be surrounded by many people who are not having that intention. And so sometimes we as leaders, we get subsumed with those who are around us.
Your Grace, the situation in South Sudan is very sad. What are people telling you? What do people want?
People are being frustrated because of the situation of lack of peace. And people would like to do business. But you see here, you hear people are being killed on the road to Nimule. And many people are frustrated. South Sudanese would like to really detach themselves from this violent situation. But what can they do? They are indeed frustrated because of lack of just the basic needs, water, other things. And so people are so frustrated. And we do not like our people to to be more frustrated. We would like to encourage them to see that at the end of the tunnel, there is only some light, and that light will come one day to South Sudan, I think.
Let us focus on your statement about the light at the end of the tunnel. People in Tombora are not seeing that light. I understand the church has sent a fact-finding mission to Tombora. What is happening in Tombora?
What is happening in Tombora, Yambio, especially Tombora, is a conflict which has a really international dimension. Why? Because we see that according to the local report, the conflict pitted the people of Balanda and Azandi. But when you see, when you hear further who are involved in the war fight, in the fight of the war, you will get people from Central Africa, from different other countries who are involved there.
In the backdrop of the slow pace of the implementation of the peace agreement, intercommunal fighting and road ambushes, if you have the opportunity to speak to the various leaders of the groups that signed the revitalized peace agreement, what would you tell them?
I would say really there is no option to this peace. People must implement this peace. I think that this is the last chance. If the alternative will be the destruction of we as a young country in this world. And I would still insist on all our leaders, both in the government and in opposition, that they must at least implement this peace. Because the peace that we have has a lot of chapters that are very good. If it is implemented, letter and spirit, I think we will gain a lot of things from this revitalized peace agreement, which has been labored with the help of our international partners and the regional group, EGO. So I think that is the only alternative that we would like to see our leaders focus their eyes on. And I had even spoken to the president. The president himself said he will always opt for peace. And this peace is a matter of life for him. So I think all of us see it difficult, but we can succeed in implementing this peace.
That's Stephen Ameyo Martin, the Archbishop of the Catholic Diocese of Juba. He spoke with me from Juba earlier today. Today is the International Day of Democracy. In 2007, the United Nations General Assembly set aside September 15 as a day to promote and uphold the principles of democracy. Since 2013, when conflict broke out in South Sudan, activists in the country have said there is no political space for other parties to present their policies to South Sudanese. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
David Jamay Kolok, executive director of the local non-profit Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, says South Sudanese should be given an opportunity to decide their own destiny. Kolok says involving every citizen in governance and issues is the best way to solve the crisis in South Sudan.
I think if we want to move a country forward, there must be recognition that the contribution of every citizen matters, regardless of whether that person has competed with you or has voted you or not voted. I think these are things that must be taken into account.
The United Nations say the COVID-19 crisis has resulted in major social, political, and legal challenges globally as countries adopt emergency measures to address the pandemic. The United Nations General Antonio Guterres has urged governments to be transparent, responsive, and accountable in their COVID-19 response and ensure that any emergency measures are legal, proportionate, necessary, and non-discriminatory. This year's hashtag promoted by the UN is Stand Up for Human Rights. Kolok says political dialogue is necessary and is the best solution for countries mired in conflict.
A country that does not speak to itself is not a progressive country. And therefore, if there are other issues, regardless of the differences, there must be always a solution towards addressing those issues.
Pasquale Bandilidi, a lawmaker from Western Equatorial States, says young people must stand up to defend democracy. He says political awareness can bring about change in a country like South Sudan.
To promote the women, the young, is to teach them the basic principles of democracy and the basic constitutional rights that they have in this country. If they are aware, then they can always participate, they can involve in political parties, because now the best thing to participate in politics in most part of the world is to join the political party.
South Sudanese who spoke to this program say that although democracy is largely a foreign concept, its benefits can usher in change.
My name is Aita William, and I believe that democracy is a system whereby people get to change their rulers in a very peaceful manner, and the government is given the right to rule people because they say that that is how they want it to be done. In this manner, the people have a right to choose the kind of leaders that they want to lead them.
My name is Sarah Osman Gandhi. According to me, democracy is where people can be part of decision making. They take part in issues affecting their communities and get solutions to how they can be run.
UN Chief Guterres says countries must respect and protect, among other rights, freedom of expression, freedom of the press, freedom of information, and freedom of assembly during the COVID-19 pandemic. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan's delegation travels for the UN General Assembly. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes. And where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I've made a mistake, I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes. So, yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The 76th session of the United Nations General Assembly begins in New York next week. Delegates are expected to grapple with worsening humanitarian abuses in some countries, increasing climate change dangers, the coronavirus pandemic, and widespread hunger. Unlike last year's meeting, which was held virtually because of the coronavirus pandemic, leaders of more than 50 countries are expected to address the session in person. The South Sudan delegation, headed by Vice President Rebecca Nyandeng, is in Washington on their way to New York to attend the meetings. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to attend. For more, VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashar speaks to International Edition's Chinedu Ofo.
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting experiment because for the first time since COVID, there's going to be a large number of foreign leaders gathering at the United Nations in person. So this will be a test. It could go off great or it could turn out to be a big super spreader event. The jury is still out on what's going to happen on that front. We were not expecting so many leaders to come in person. In fact, the United States mission to the United Nations sent a letter to all the delegations asking them to basically stay away and send video messages. But at last count, President Biden will be at the UN General Assembly on the first day to deliver his speech in person, and 82 other heads of state will be coming in person, and 43 prime ministers and heads of government will also be coming. So that's quite a large group for a UN General Assembly held during the pandemic still, especially when we know that not everybody is vaccinated, that only 20% of people in low and lower middle income countries have been vaccinated.
What is the realistic expectation?
Well, there's never a particular outcome expected. Like I said, it's mainly for leaders to come and meet and talk. It's an opportunity where the whole world gets together normally so that they have this one-on-one time to try and do face-to-face diplomacy to sort out pressing issues. So this year it will be a combination of face-to-face diplomacy and online virtual diplomacy. So maybe this is the new direction that we're going in, you know, permanently. We don't know yet, but in some ways it affords people from some countries a better opportunity to participate because they can participate virtually than it might have before. So it can have its benefits as well.
The United Nations has asked the government of Kenya to share crucial information on the historical injustices imposed on Kenyan communities during the colonial times. This after the British government refused to resolve the matter. As Maureen Ojiambo reports, the UN Human Rights Council wants to know whether the colonizers had offered any form of compensation to the communities.
The letter addressed to President Uhuru Kenyatta follows a petition filed before the United Nations in Geneva by Kericho Governor Paul Chepkwony. The case against the British government was formally initiated by Governor Chepkwony in 2014 with allegations that the UK stole land for tea plantation belonging to the Talai and Kipsigis communities who suffered human rights violations and forceful evictions a century ago in the Kenya's Rift Valley region. The Human Rights Watch East Africa director Otieno Namwaya said that a lot of these abuses have already been captured in previous reports and that the current administration may not be able to solve despite the UN intervention.
It's sort of odd that the UN has to turn to the Kenyatta administration because a lot of these abuses were captured in the Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Commission report. Those historical injustices that are captured in that report include those that were committed during the colonial times and those that were committed post-historical colonial time. Even if justice has delayed, which is bad enough, I think it's better we do something now if we can than just ignoring the whole issue altogether.
The letter that was made public on Friday reads, "We would be grateful for your observation on the following matters. Please indicate if financial support has been granted by the government of the UK or the Great Britain and the Northern Ireland and or the multinational tea companies to provide social, medical and educational services infrastructure, and essential utilities to alleviate or compensate for the victim's suffering as recommended by National Land Commission. Human rights lawyer Okali Makanda says the land being owned by foreign multinational companies may not be repossessed by locals, as many cases have been dismissed before the UK courts.
The same cases were dismissed in the UK courts because of the claim was that after half a century since the atrocities happened, it was not possible. Justice could not be served. The statute of limitations in Kenya has a period of 12 years for claims on land, and therefore, you know, after almost 60 or so years after independence and about 100 years when the settlers came to Kenya, or even the UK will claim that many years have since passed, the powers were passed to the government of Kenya at independence, and that the British cannot be liable for the lost land.
Makanda says the UK can decide to invoke the case if the idea will interfere with their interests.
The biggest challenge is that the lands are currently occupied by businesses and companies. The UK is a permanent member of the Security Council and therefore has veto powers at the Security Council. Security Council has a stranglehold of any discussions against its member states and the different UN agencies, and I think they have the power to shoot down any deliberations that will be adverse to the interests of the UK government.
The communities were subjected to gross violation of human rights such as unlawful killing, sexual violence, torture, inhuman and degrading treatment, arbitrary detention, displacement and violation of rights to privacy, family life and property. An estimate of 500,000 Kipsigis Centralai people suffered the violations. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
A new report says a network of Kenyan Twitter influencers are being paid to launch online misinformation attacks against activists and members of the country's judiciary. Brian Obilo is a cybersecurity engineer, currently a tech and society fellow at Mozilla Foundation, which specializes in cybersecurity, resilience, awareness, and disinformation. Brian is also the co-writer of the report entitled Inside the Shadow World of Disinformation for Hire in Kenya.
Who are these financiers, and are there other similar campaigns against government initiatives or bills in parliaments or even politicians?
Yeah, I think that's a question we receive a lot. So one of the sources that talked to us told us that, first of all, they organize some of this disinformation. They coordinate some of this disinformation campaigns through the use of WhatsApp groups. And then once they hit the, you know, KPIs, then they receive their money through the mobile platform M-Pesa. So the people that are probably paying them are middlemen and middlemen and middlemen. So it's very, very hard to really trace that money and get the right people who are sort of financing the disinformation campaigns themselves. But at the end of the day, the most important question you can always ask yourself, and without a rhetorical question you can ask yourself, is who stands to benefit the most by sort of amplifying the Building Bridges initiative, and also at the same time pushing dissenting voices, or rather opposing voices, away from the platform. So it's very, very hard to answer that question, but that's how you can put it, like who stands to benefit from it.
Okay, so whoever benefits is the one who's most likely paying, but it's very hard to trace the money directly to them.
Yes, exactly.
Are there any local laws that they're breaking by engaging in disinformation campaigns?
So in Kenya, we have the Computer Misuse and Cybercrimes Act that essentially forbids you from publishing false information. So it's not very clear, because of the nature of the disinformation they're spewing, whether they're breaking any laws. And also some of the disinformation we saw may constitute to maybe libel and defamation, especially the ones that the five judges of the High Court received. Some of the attacks they received may constitute libel and this. So it's not very clear which laws they are breaking per se, but I guess it may depend on a case-by-case basis of every disinformation campaign and the exact content of what they were pushing out there.
Does, you know, we know in the US, Twitter actively last year was blocking accounts that were engaged in disinformation campaigns, whether it's against COVID vaccines or whether it was political campaigns. Has there been any such initiative in Kenya where Twitter has actually gone as far as blocking or deactivating an account for engaging in that type of activity?
Yeah, so one thing I can mention is that when we reached out to Twitter with this, they first of all thanked us for bringing this to their attention. And they conducted their own internal investigation, and their teams took action on just over 100 Twitter accounts that they believed had sort of violated their platform manipulation and spam policy. And while giving us feedback on the same, they told us that they had found one network of coordinated accounts which sort of link back to other accounts that were deactivated in 2020 last year. So this just shows the resilience of some of these groups that are conducting the disinformation campaigns. And even if Twitter takes action, they find ways in which they can set up more accounts to continue violating Twitter's platform manipulation and spam policy. So there is still so much more to be done.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We'll now leave you with the song Kifaya by Emmanuel Kembe.
Kalina gesi musawa por lokal kabiru hilu vitamin katir fipoku kalina gesi musawa we adala abiye danyar kuta junub bishamal barbazal ablev river bir will be free thanks to the God. Thanks to Machakos, thanks to Nakuru, thanks to Nyanyuki, Shukuran Jazila Lenny Basha, Lakin Yakama Bizip Mashakil, Mashakil Bijip Mutukatir, Umutukatir Kusara, Kusara Lena,
Faya Kifaya, Kifaya Kifaya Yakwana.
Come sinin,
kifaya, 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 kifaya ya Bwana, kifaya ala nina shoko.
God bless our leaders,
kifaya,
give them more wisdom,
kifaya ya Bwana,
lead us to our destination, and bless everyone who helped put it together to let the sun shine bright in Sudan. Gerib, sita sana gerib, gerib, sita sana gerib, gerib. Borodokale pita munude ye. Borodokale pita munude ya.
Kalina gesi musawa.
Borodokal kabiru hilu. Vitamin katiru fipoku.
Kalina gesi musawa. Beadala.
Abiye danyar kuta junub.
Bishamal barbazal.
Ablev river bir. Will be free.
Thanks to the God. Thanks to Machakos. Thanks to Nakuru. Thanks to Nyanyuki. Shukuran jazila leni basha. Lakin nyakama visit.
We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe and the song Kifaya. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
God bless our leaders. Give them more wisdom. Lead us to our destination. And bless everyone who helped put it together. To let the sun shine bright in Sudan. Gerib, sitasana gerib.